Well, it is my honor to introduce today's keynote speaker. I'm really excited about that. And again, I just wanted to welcome you to the August edition of the MBN Distinguished Speaker Series. And so thank you for spending some of your time here. Today you're going to hear from Brad and Catherine. And, you know, I've known their story, especially Brad's, before Catherine was in the picture too. And just going back and seeing him on a journey. So I'm really excited that you're going to be able to hear both of their stories, because they're both as exciting, as neat how they were brought together. Our speakers, their official names are Brad and then also Dr. Catherine Jeffrey. They're the co-founders of CauseGear, but their life is so much more, and CauseGear is just incredible. It's not just a merchandise company. You're going to see how it is really impacting the world. Dr. Catherine Jeffrey has a Bachelor's of Science in Biology and a Bachelor's of Arts in Psychology from Indiana University, a Master's in Bachelor's in Counseling from Clemson University, and a Doctorate in Education. So prior to CauseGear, she had the opportunity to train up future leaders and still enjoys consulting with companies who want to make a positive social impact. She's also well known for a consulting business that specializes in the understanding of the millennial generation, Generation Y, one area that she has focused on in her 20-plus years of studying human behavior. Brad Jeffrey has a Bachelor's of Science Graphic Design from Bradley University and an MBA from the Lake Forest Graduate School of Management. Brad's background includes 32 years of sales, marketing, design, leadership, and business development. He's had the opportunity to lead and manage a variety of business experiences, including sales management and also industrial companies and marketing green technology brands. So after Brad's return from travels in Africa and South Asia, I couldn't shake the hunger to develop a business model to help the millions of people that are suffering from human trafficking, slavery, and then extreme poverty. As he shared his vision with friends and met his wife, Catherine, who also shares his passion and heart for helping the least of these, it became increasingly clear to move forward to engage the fortunate few in helping the marginalized many. So CauseGear was started, and now every purchase from the company helps redeem someone from slavery in a sustainable way. And, you know, as Brad and I were talking before, too, not only does the purchase directly help them, but it also gives you something that you can use to show someone, to talk about these subjects as well. So it is something very, very visual as well. Every generation, a handful of individuals start a movement that changes what is viewed as possible. And today we're going to hear from two such individuals. So I've known Brad, like I said, for several years. And so I saw when he was working in a company very successful, he could have gone one direction and been very successful and, you know, and still been involved with things on the side and done okay. But his heart was really gripped, and he made a decision that a lot of people don't. He actually followed through. He really, with both Catherine and Brad, you know, they compassion is a verb very much with them. So I've seen that story unfold, and I'm really excited to hear, get an update, too, on that. So please join me in welcoming Brad and Catherine Jeffrey to MBN.
Great to be here. So you see this number up on the screen, and it's hard to believe, and this statement kind of sums up why we do what we do. You're going to learn more about that. So I grew up in the Chicago area, Glenview, was part of a family business in Evanston for quite a while, and got to a place in my life where I was really... felt this void, felt this emptiness. Though I became a Christian when I was 12, I found later on in my 40s that I was very far from God, and I didn't have this peace about me, and I was really struggling. There was this hole, this void. But on the outside, you would have thought I had it all together. I had a thriving business with my brother. The family business was doing really well. I was making a good deal of money. Had a lot of cool stuff. and was doing some really exciting things, you know, outdoor adventure things and all that, and I was living the life of success. But I didn't. There was this huge emptiness in me, and what I realized is that I was so far from the Lord that I originally accepted when I was 12. I didn't really know Him anymore, and I had taken life into my own hands, and I had pursued success. Success was my God, and it was actually my sister who said, "Why don't you change churches?" So I went to a church, and they were offering Alpha. And I don't know if you ever heard of Alpha Ministry. But I went to Alpha, and it was there that I was reunited with my Savior, Jesus Christ. And He gave me new eyes. New eyes. And that's what happens. When you surrender your life, you let go of the controls, and He has the control. He helps you see things like you've never seen. And it was with those new eyes, I went on a little mission trip to Mexico, Juarez, Mexico, and came back from that trip, and I had a really negative view about poverty. I guess I had a very entitled view about poverty at that time before that trip. I thought, well, you know, if you're poor, you must not be taking advantage of the opportunities that are out there in the world. You know, I don't get it. I grew up hard working at a business when I was really young, and I wanted something I'd go work for it and get it. And I just thought, you know, they must be making some poor choices. That was my arrogant attitude about people in poverty. But when I was in the Juarez, we were with this family, and we were building a house that was basically the size of this area we're standing in for their family of seven. And they were so joyous that we were there and we were helping them. And I started to see what family and joy really looked like. It had nothing to do with material things. And I got home from that trip to my luxury surroundings, manicured lawns, foreign luxury automobiles, lots of material trappings, and mine included. And I literally felt sick to my stomach, had a physical reaction. And I was ashamed of how I was kind of hoarding my wealth and my fortune and not really thinking of other people. And that's what the Lord does when you accept Him into your heart. And so, fast forward, I went to another group, ministry group called Halftime. And Halftime is this intensive for 2 days, and it helps you move from a mindset of success to significance from a Christian perspective. And it was during my Halftime experience that the question was asked, if you died today, what would people say about you? Or what is your legacy that you're leaving? It's a hard one. And I heard that, and I did not like the answers I think people would have said about me. And as at that point, I wanted to start making some changes. So I decided during that time that I wanted to do something for the least of these, live out my faith, but help the least of these. I didn't know what that meant, but I want to help people, and if I was going to die, I want to be known as someone that did that, not had a lot of cool stuff. And I love business, though. And I realized business isn't a dirty word if it's used for the right reasons. So I want to do something around business. I think capitalism is a great vehicle when used for good. I wanted to do something with that. So I came back from that with this idea that I wanted to do something different. So I left the family business, and I waited to see what God had in store for me at that point.
So I grew up in a hardworking, middle-class family. Everything we had, we earned, right? That was kind of, we were Germans, you know. You had to work hard to get anything. And I always had a faith in God. My dad was someone who lived out his faith. When you were around him, you knew that you were loved unconditionally, and that love came from his relationship he had with Christ, which is a huge blessing, the impact he had on me as a person. And then when I was 17, my dad died of lung cancer. They don't know how he got it, but that pretty much rocked my world. My dad was definitely the rock in our family and a foundation in a huge way. And so from there, I started to, well, I headed off to college. It was a year before I was leaving the house. And still had that belief that God was there, but now I really had to figure it out for myself. You know, it was, my dad's not here to guide me, and I need to seek out that relationship and really, really own this for me. So I got involved with Crew in college and really learned about that relationship in a different sort of way. And then after college, moved to North Carolina, got involved in a church, a really powerful small group experience for me. I really believe that God can do amazing things through community and the people he surrounds you with if you allow yourself to be vulnerable with them. And then there was a man who really God brought into my life to disciple me for several years. And he really taught me the free gift of the gospel and how powerful that is. And a lot of times that can come with just being present with people, right? And loving them right where they're at. And so he continues that. This was, I won't say how many years ago, but just kidding. He still continues to be that kind of father figure in my life. So that was huge for me. So right after college, I worked at a wilderness camp for emotionally disturbed teenagers. That was the politically correct term at the time. These kids were there for 9 to 12 months. They were on their way to jail, and this was kind of their last stop. And the woods was going to make a difference, right? And so it was a very transformational experience for many of them, and for me included. Powerful stuff can happen when you do life on life in such a way with people. And then this is when I started to understand my love for groups and community, in addition to my small group at church, and really my heart for justice and for people who are vulnerable and need someone to come alongside of them. After that, I ran a foster care program, and then I moved up to Chicago from North Carolina and started teaching leadership development. And that's where I really started to understand how much discipleship and leadership are intricately intertwined, right? As we grow in who we are meant to be in Christ, we become more influential people for his kingdom. And hopefully, right, if we're living for Christ, we're seeking to glorify him. So when we're seeking to become all who he created us to be, the two go hand in hand. With my dad dying, I really learned that we have a limited time here on earth and that God has reason for that. And so I always feel this urgency to make the most of it, no matter where I am. I very much have an entrepreneurial spirit, and I'm a developer, and yeah, I think life transformation and people who kind of live on the margins of life are what really get me up in the morning. So
as I'm thinking about what does God have for me next, I made some new friends with some brothers, and one of them said, hey, we're going to Ethiopia and Kenya to look at poverty, meet with some pastors, meet with some business leaders, look at micro-lending. Do you want to come with? And I'm like, yeah. So we go to Kenya and Ethiopia, and during that trip, I find myself in the Kibera slum. Kibera is the largest slum in Kenya. It's right outside of Nairobi. It's said that there's over 500,000 people living there in the size of 1 square mile. You can imagine that. Hard to imagine. With open sewers. This is a photo that I took. This is a young mom, probably 14 or 15 with her child. It's a pretty typical scene. And while we were there, we met with these young women that were HIV positive in a ministry that were trying to make money making jewelry from bones from the garbage. They're taking bones from the garbage, who knows what kind of bones they were, and making jewelry. And I said, "How's it going? You know, are you making enough money?" And they go, "Oh yeah, we're making $3 a day, which is actually three times what you typically make in Cabrera, which is $1 a day, and we're doing pretty good." And I said, "Really? Is that what do you need? Is that enough?" And I got them to admit that really $8 a day was the game changer for them. If they could have $8 a day, they could provide completely for themselves basic essentials of life. And so I locked in on that number. I'm like, okay, here's a group of women. What if a job was created, you know, for women like this? So I'm walking through this slum after leaving them, and I'm with our group, and I couldn't stop thinking about a business model. I'm typing this model into my phone. You know, what if people like this, women like this, were making fashion that was competitive with the best brands in the world, that was in every aspect of competition, but more importantly, was linked to changing the lives of women like this? And I didn't know what it was, what the product was, but that was the idea. You know, because at the time, cause purchasing was starting to go, was becoming very much in vogue. Where, you know, you buy something and for every purchase, something is given or benefiting some charity or some purchase. And millennials were all about that. And I saw that trend. I'm like, this is going to be a growing area, but it seems like there needs to be something more mainstream, and it needs to be a job creation program, not a handout. Mm-hmm. Most of the programs then and some today are handout related, and they're not changing the circumstances of the person. So I came back with this idea in my head, and I ended up meeting with a gentleman I just met, a new friend. His name is Saji from India, and he said, "Brad, if you want to see poverty, you must come to India." So that was an important step.
So while Brad was in Cabrera, I was teaching leadership development and taking groups of college students to India and experiencing the severe poverty firsthand and really developing a heart and a passion for the Indian people. And the joy that they have over there is just indescribable. And even when one of the things that strikes me the most, even about the Christian community over there, is like when they take communion, they understand the cost, and they understand it in such a way that we don't. Because our world and the way our lives have gone are very different. Like there's a cost when they enter into that relationship over there. We had not met yet. And so the next thing, you know, I meet the 34th employee of Facebook, and he comes to the college where I was and speaks to my students about leadership. And he is really passionate about pouring into the next generation. And we started to get lunch and kind of brainstorm how we could impact our students further. And Brad was months away from starting the business and wanted to get college students involved. And I happened to be the connector person. And this man was friends with Brad. So he's like, "Oh, you need to meet my friend. He's starting this company."
And then I saw this woman and I thought, "That's the woman for me."
Best sell you ever made, bro.
And we both had other jobs. Brad had another business he was running. I was teaching leadership development, and that was the time I was working on my dissertation around millennials and leadership, and which has now led to different consulting jobs around generations in the workforce. Back then, we had no idea what a relevant topic this would become. And that research really helped shape the business in a lot of ways, because millennials, as you guys know, right, they really care. They think about their purchasing power and the impact that has on people and the planet. And so it really tied together amazingly well. And in this photo, you'll notice this we took over in India. This is a rag picker. That's the name. So in India, they still live by the caste system. So she was born into this. This is not a job she necessarily chose. This is just her lot in life this time around. And this is what $2 a day looks like. She picks up trash. She turns it in. She gets really pennies for what she's done. And this is part of what really inspired us as we, you know, developed the mission statement is it's to transform what the lives of 1 million people from unfathomable poverty to have a sustainable jobs. So we want to give these people hope, because a lot of them in the caste system, they don't have hope, right? They were born into it, and it's their path in life. We also decided to turn it into an L3C, which is a limited low-profit liability company, which basically means we want to keep the purpose before the profit. It's a fairly new designation, similar to some of you have heard of a B Corp. Not quite a B Corp, but it's kind of on its way there, which we're headed there ourselves. But, you know, we don't want money to be the driver. We want to keep the purpose pure and front and center.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the big challenges with scaling a business is, how do you fund it? How do you scale a business, right? Or nonprofits, similar challenges. You need capital. Well, we made a very, early in developing and writing the business plan, we made a very strategic decision, a very important decision, that was we weren't going to take on debt, and we weren't going to have outside investors. Because my concern was that outside investors would start to dilute the purpose, and it becomes about return on investment. And the return that we're talking about is freedom here. So we wanted to take that away, that temptation, and focus on growing the business, but we don't have much capital of our own. So we figured out a way. We started to look at, well, where's a lot of money spent on swag? Well, turns out the branding, the corporate branding industry is huge. And what we realized is that we could take the marketing budget of a company and turn it into a corporate social responsibility growth engine. One of the challenges, especially in the fashion industry, is cash flow, inventory management, all that. We have to buy product, we're having it made in India, it takes a long time. Well, when you're doing corporate branded items or event items, you have a long lead time. You may be planning 6 months out before they actually need the product. And you can get a deposit up front for that commitment. So it's our own little Kickstarter, if you will. We figured out, well, we can use corporate branding as our Kickstarter to give us the short-term loan we need to keep the cash flow positive. So we have a very positive cash flow. We don't have receivables. And this has been a huge blessing to us. So we work with major corporations to do their branded gear. This is the number regarding promotional products, 23 billion plus. And it's up 2.5% over 2016 to 2017. It's a huge area. It also is what, it's an opportunity to engage millennials and what they care about. Millennials want to have corporate giving to be participatory. They want to be part of it. They want to see it. They want it tangible. And when you have something that's branded like we do, and then we measure the social impact through a custom, we call Days of Freedom hang tag on the product, it's another touch point, an opportunity to engage people around this mission. One of the key areas of when we started this in our business plans, and the reason we picked the fashion products we do, is they're very visual and they're very tangible. You have a tote bag, you have a backpack, and it's supposed to create conversation. Like, oh, where'd you get that backpack? And then the one who owns it has an opportunity to share that this is more than just a bag. This is a vehicle to end slavery, and this is how it works. So we have a lot of education around a purchase. And this hang tag for corporate product does that. And we're getting requests from major corporations. These are some of them that we're working with, and they're saying, hey, we heard about this measured social impact, this hang tag. Do we get a hang tag if we order products from you? And it's like, yes, it's sticking. The idea, people are actually seeing the importance of social impact tied to what otherwise would be kind of an insignificant thing, you know, a T-shirt, a bag, or whatever that you get at an event. So this has been a really important part of a blessing for us, and we're also working with quite a few nonprofits and ministries and universities and doing their items for conferences and things like that. I just want to touch on the faith journey piece. This is truly a faith journey for us, because each one of these steps have been like, Lord, I don't know what to do. We don't have any money. How do we get money? Don't want to get debt. That's not good. And then ideas pop in our head. Oh, branded swag, long lead time, deposits. Yes. Okay, try that. But it's been one thing after another like that. And they're like, well, how are we going to get major corporations? That seems impossible. Well, the Lord has connected us with different people in universities, and we're doing it. We're doing it. So we're really excited about that. This is an example of some of the products, simple tote bags. One of the key things in designing the product is that it's mainstream design. It competes with major brands. So we want to compete. We don't want the purchase to be to sacrifice quality or what the consumer wants to help somebody. We like to think that people will want to just support a cause because it's important and it's, you know, everybody wants to end slavery and they'll just buy our bag if it does that. The sobering reality is we as consumers buy stuff we like, that we want, and the cause is just icing on the cake. We have to get that order correct in terms of the consumer connection. Now, the order for us is to create jobs. For the least of these, the bag's just a vehicle, right? But the bag's got to deliver. We have to deliver quality and at the right price. And we have a lifetime guarantee to assure that, you know, that we're serious about this. So that's a really important thing that we built in.
Yeah, and we're also seeking to keep the price point, right? A lot of ethical brands, it's like $500 for a pair of jeans, which the average consumer can't afford, right? So we want our products to be not only quality and stylish, but also at a price point that the average consumer can make that conscious decision, right? So our company is called Cause Gear, but about 2 years ago we started the line Made by Free Women. The reason we did this is because out of the 40 million slaves today, 70% are female. And so this brand not only raises awareness to that huge problem, but it also helps empower our female crafters. Because in India, the more difficult, more highly skilled jobs go to men because they take them. And so this forces our team and kind of the typical India mindset that you can run into to allow the women to learn those skills. Another interesting stat, there are over 300 million people in India who live at less than $1.90 a day. That is almost equivalent to the number of people who live in the United States. So a lot of times when I do presentations on the generations, I may say, right, 3 out of 10 of you in this room, you know, you don't brush your teeth, right? Or something silly, right? Some stat. So 3 out of 10 of you might raise your hand. In this case, it would be every single one of you raising your hand, living at less than $1.90 a day. That's a pretty staggering statistic. So if you think about how a simple purchase can empower these very women, actually, this is clearly one of our teams, to have a new way of life. This team in particular, they live out in a rural village, and when they, if they are not married by the time they are 18, they are forced into marriage. But if they have a job, then they're seen, because women in India are worth less than cows, okay, because cows are sacred in the Hindu religion. If they have a job until they're the age of 21, right? Because when I have a job, I'm bringing money into the family, I'm helping support. Then if they do that, they're seen as having value. So when they turn 21, they're free to marry whomever they want. Okay, that's kind of their culture in this village. And so just having a job for 3 years, if they can make tote bags, right, for 3 years, changes the entire trajectory of their lives. We have another team where one of the crafters, she comes from a family, there's five daughters, And again, women are a burden in India, right? You want sons. That's what you want. And so family of five daughters. And one day the dad just moved and went to live with his other family in another part of India. So he abandoned his wife and five daughters. And when that happens, women often aren't employed, right? It's a very patriarchal society. And so if your husband dies or is injured or leaves you, you're left with nothing. So this girl ended up getting a job on the team, and she actually was doing so well that she spun off and started her own business, and one of her sisters works with her, and she's completed school and now wants to go on and become a nurse. And so these are the kind of things that literally, when you start to think about, because often when we buy things, right, you walk into Target, you don't automatically go, oh, I wonder who made this, right? We forget that there's someone on the other side of that. Our clothes aren't made by machines, right? There's a person, a human. And so when you start to think about that and you understand the stories and the life change that your conscious purchase can make, you can start to see how when a lot of people do that together, we start to make a huge difference. So God definitely has us on a journey, a very unexpected one, and he keeps showing his faithfulness, and he keeps providing some days literally at the last minute. We're like, I don't know how we're going to do this. But we're still moving forward, and you know, lives are being changed.
Yeah, just to close, we have a new trademark called Made Free, and it's we're trying to get the good news out to the general public that you can help make people free. You are the catalyst for freedom, and it doesn't matter where you are. And we're really excited to be able to have this message to get to people and to engage the general public. That's really kind of all we have today. So thanks for having us.